Hello, I'm Sherry House, a missionary living in Thailand who loves to study the lives of great women of whom it can be said, she hath done what she could. Welcome to Silhouettes, my weekly story about a lady whose life challenges, encourages, and teaches me. I hope as you listen today, your heart will be encouraged and challenged too, to do what you can for the Lord. So grab a cup of tea, sit back and enjoy. Let me tell you her story.
Elvine Johannesson was born on March 3, 1894 in Norway. Elvine's mother was from the rich and powerful Lund family and at 16 was disinherited because she married a lowly seaman. Elvine's father was often away at sea, and one day when she was only 4 years old and her brother Joseph only five, her aunt and uncle, her father's brother and sister-in-law, who were unable to have children, had Elvine's mother declared incompetent because they didn't like her and snatched the children away. Stunned and feeling she couldn't face more shame, Elvine's mother fled to America instead of asking her family for help. It was not a happy childhood. Elvine and her brother grew up feeling that their parents had abandoned them and that there was some mysterious tragedy being kept from them. When Elvine's brother was but 15, he went to America to find his mother. The following year, at the age of 15, Elvine also escaped to America. Elvine found work as a servant girl in a Jewish home on Park Avenue in New York City, and she began calling herself Ella. Ella faithfully attended the Norwegian Baptist Church, where she met a pastor named Elias Tvetten. June 18, 1915, they were married. Ella's husband came to rely on her greatly. For the most part, he entrusted the care of their home and the raising of their seven children to her. Because of her husband's meager salary and generous heart, Ella had to be creative to provide for the family and came to rely on God unconditionally. She had a close walk with him that was evident in every part of her life and always had a hymn or a Bible verse on her heart to help her or her children through every task. After pastoring in Brooklyn, Ella's husband took a position to work as a pastor among the Norwegians in Wisconsin. After that, they returned to Brooklyn for a period of time before he took a pastorate at the First Norwegian Baptist Church in Winnipeg, Canada. Their humble house became a haven for the homeless immigrants who often sought shelter and a bite to eat. Both Ella and her husband would never turn anyone away and always made sure to have a time of reading God's Word and prayer with them before they left. Ella loved and cared for each person who came through her doors. The Norwegian Baptist Conference contacted the Tvettens and asked if they'd be willing to be missionaries to the Scandinavian newcomers in the Canadian province of Saskatchewan, and they agreed. After a time, Ella's husband was asked to return to Chicago to pastor the Baptist Church in Logan Square. Inside the walls of their church and their home, many immigrants found hope in times of despair when work and food was scarce, friendship in times of loneliness and separation from family back home, comfort during difficult periods of change in a new land, and encouragement as they dreamed the impossible dream. In 1938, after ministering in Chicago for 10 years, they received a request from the First Norwegian Baptist Church back in Brooklyn, where they had started, asking them to come home. Ella was asked to work with the orphans and become the superintendent of the Norwegian Children's Home. She accepted the offer. To the amazement of others, Ella made quick work of putting everything in order, including all the unruly children. The structure and biblical principles she lived by daily began to make a change in the children, and they flourished under her love and supervision. One day, a young orphan girl brought her a limp plant and begged Ella to not throw it away. When Ella explained that the plant was dead, the girl responded, "Well, then you must love it back to life, Mother." Ella repotted the plant in fresh soil, provided it with warmth, sunlight, and water, and then waited. Eventually, a new shoot appeared, and it became a lovely green plant once again. That phrase, "then you must love it back to life," was one that resounded in Ella's ears every time a frightened, wilted child was brought to her doorstep. One day, some of the orphan boys were discussing what they would do when they turned 18 and had to leave the home. Some spoke of going into the military and others of going to college. Then one boy piped up and asked, "But whom do we come home to when we go away?" Ella was quick to respond, "Boys, you can come home to me. Wherever I am, you can always come home to me." Even with Ella's tragic childhood and penniless adulthood, she lived a life of fullness. She hardly seemed to remember that she was the granddaughter of an aristocrat and never sought out her wealthy family connections in her home country. When Ella was 57 years old, though, the King of Norway sought her out. He had heard of her work with the Norwegian immigrants all these years, and especially her running of the children's home. He awarded her the St. Olav's Medal, the second highest honor given by the Norwegian government. On January 14, 1977, at the age of 82, Ella passed away. For over 60 years, she humbly and faithfully served the Lord alongside her husband, purposefully making a difference in the lives of everyone she met. Well, you can find out more about Ella Twetten on my website, sherryhouse.com, but let me tell you another quick story about her life that resonated with one of my own. People found in Ella a friend, a counselor, and a prayer warrior. She had a strong faith, and she always prayed believing. If she prayed for rain, she'd carry an umbrella. Mondays were wash days and soup day. Different ones would drop their laundry off and get a bite to eat and pick it up the following Monday. Ella would always pray as she put her scraps of leftovers in the kettle to boil. The soup and her homemade rye bread seemed to multiply like the loaves and fishes in the Bible, and regardless of how many unexpected guests turned up that day, there was always enough. Her husband had great faith in her faith as well. Once he found a man terribly sick with tuberculosis hiding in the barn. He had not been paid his wages from his boss and had nothing to his name. Ella's husband brought him inside and said, "I told him you could make him well." Ella quickly deduced that he was dying of homesickness. She knew if she cured that, God would cure the tuberculosis. So she boiled his clothes, fed him soup and bread, sang him songs and told him stories, and contacted his family in Norway. As his heart began to heal, so did his health. Meeting people's physical needs was always just as important to Ella as meeting their spiritual needs. When asked how she was able to manage taking so many different ones into her small and humble home, Ella would always respond, "When you have heart room, you have house room." No matter what reason brought a neighbor, friend, or stranger to her doorstep, before ever trying to tackle their need or give counsel or advice, Ella would always say, "First we have coffee." It became her signature statement. Ella felt a good cup of coffee was always the beginning of a solution. It was a symbol of hospitality, of comfort, and stability. She was a practical counselor and doled out her wisdom and uncommon common sense as they sipped away. Tea, not coffee, was the choice of drink in New Zealand. When I first went there, I couldn't get over how friendly everyone was. No one ever seemed to meet a stranger, and everywhere I went, everyone was always asking me if I wanted a cuppa or a cup of tea. It didn't take long for me to realize that this was the Kiwi solution to everything. If you were tired and weary, come, let's have a cuppa. If you were sad, come, let's have a cuppa. If you were perplexed and couldn't find a solution to a problem, come, let's have a cuppa. To the Kiwi, a cuppa could solve any problem and was the catalyst that put the world back in right motion. Although I embraced this cultural tradition and even enjoyed it, especially if ginger biscuits were offered, I often had to hide my frustration when I just wanted to get down to business and take care of the solution instead of taking the time to have a cup of tea. One day, as I was driving, a young teen boy missed his red light and smashed right into my car in the middle of the intersection, leaving it in a crescent shape. Traffic stopped and people started getting out of their cars and coming out of the shops and businesses nearby. I wasn't hurt and I got out of my car to assess the damage. It was a total write-off and I was so upset and angry at this kid. The first person to reach me was a lady from a business on the corner of the intersection. She came straight up to me and put her arm around me and said, "Come, let's have a cuppa." I'm afraid my response to her about how no cup of tea was going to fix this situation was not said in a very Christ-like or Kiwi-like manner. Today I'd like to do a little Bible study I've entitled, "Let's Have a Cuppa." In these modern days of busyness, more and more people, including Christians, cherish their privacy and their time. Although they have no issue with inviting people into their home via social media to let the world know what they ate that day and what they did, and to ask their 1,000 friends on Facebook their opinion on whether they should paint their living room walls blue-gray or gray-blue, they are rarely willing to open up their home to someone in need, and they never seem to have time to visit their neighbor next door, stop and help a stranger, or give a word of encouragement. The Bible is filled with commands for us to make the effort to meet people at the point of their need and not ignore it, whether it is someone we know or if it's a stranger. The Bible gives us so many verses, but here are just a few. Deuteronomy 15:11 says, "For the poor shall never cease out of the land. Therefore I command thee, saying, Thou shalt open thine hand wide unto thy brother, to thy poor, and to thy needy in thy land." Galatians 6:2 says, "Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ." The first part of James 1:27 tells us, "Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction." And the last one I'll give you, Philippians 2:4 tells us, "Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others." As always, Jesus is our perfect example in this. Often in the New Testament, we see him meeting someone's physical needs before he meets their spiritual needs. To be sure, there are many times when Jesus entered a place and proclaimed the need to repent, but more often than not, he first focused on how he could help them physically. We have several examples. We've got Zacchaeus, who had been ostracized by the people and needed a friend. There was the adulterous woman who needed protection from her accusers. Peter, James, and John needed some fish in order to help support their family. The disciples needed rescue during the storm. The woman in the crowd with an issue of blood needed help with her health. Mary and Martha needed the tears and comfort of their friend when their brother died. Jesus did not shy away from people, whether they were old or young, wealthy or impoverished, lowly servants or religious leaders. Over and over again in the scriptures, it shows us that Jesus was involved in his community and the lives of his friends, neighbors, and strangers. Jesus wants us to follow in his example. He not only wants us to share the truth of eternal salvation, but he wants us to stand in his place and meet the needs of others. Sure, he could just do it himself, but instead, he chooses to use us, his servants, to do it. How amazing is that? Nowhere else is this plan of his more evident than in the story of the feeding of the 5,000 that we see in John 6. On that day, 5,000 men plus women and children were gathered listening to him preach. The evening came and it was time for dinner. Every person there had a physical need. They were hungry. The disciples saw the need, but their solution was to send them away. I'm sure they were tired themselves, and it was just easier to turn a blind eye to the need than to figure out what could be done about it. They failed to see the situation as an opportunity for the Lord to use them to do something great for someone else. This was not Jesus' solution to the need. His solution was to tell the disciples, "Give ye them to eat." Philip started calculating the cost and assessing what they had, and he responded with, 200 penny worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may take a little." It appears Andrew at least tried to find a solution when he said, "There is a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes." But he showed his doubt when he said, "But what are they among so many?" The disciples had forgotten to factor in Jesus' miracle-working power and deduced that what they had was not enough and that there was no way they could meet the need. Why didn't Jesus just rain manna down? Why didn't he just take care of the problem himself? Why ask his disciples to take care of it when he knew their limitations? I don't believe Jesus ever expected them to feed the people by themselves. I believe he merely wanted to see if they were willing to give what they were able to and allow him to bless it and multiply it and make it sufficient. Every time we have 2 choices when faced with a need, just like the disciples did that day. We can make calculations of our own ability and resources and succumb to doubt, or we can take what we have, let God bless it, multiply it, and make it sufficient. I love the little boy in this story. He is the real hero to me. He gave up his lunch, not knowing if he would go hungry that day because of it, and instead, everyone had sufficient food with leftovers, including himself. When we yield our little, we not only meet the needs of others and bless them, but we ourselves are blessed beyond measure. The Bible has many verses about the blessings that come with meeting others' needs. Proverbs 19:17 says, "He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he pay him again." Proverbs 22:9 says, "He that hath a bountiful eye shall be blessed, for he giveth of his bread to the poor." And Luke 6:38, I love this one, "Give, and it shall be given unto you, good measure, pressed down, and shaken together, and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again." The world is full of people who are suffering. We need more women who are willing to replicate the kind of womanhood that Ella displayed. We need more people who will follow her example of being someone with a deeply loving and approachable spirit who has the great desire of being the hands and feet of Jesus to meet the needs of others. Well, I hope you've enjoyed today's Silhouette, learning a little bit more about Ella Twetten and this matter of meeting others' needs. She truly was a woman of whom it could be said, "She hath done what she could." Let's you and I go do what we can do.
Silhouettes with Sherry is written and told by missionary Sherry House. To learn more about Sherry, this story, or other stories about women who were used of God, read Sherry's blog at sherryhouse.com. That's SHARI House.com. Silhouettes can be heard at this time every week on this station. Silhouettes is a Causeway Media and Faith Music Radio production.